You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
The Literature Corner.
And today I'm so excited. I've got in front of me the Proof Coffee Copy Not For Sale or Distribution Free Association. That is the novel that is forthcoming in the first week of May. But because you are special in the world of Cape Talk and Radio 702, or maybe later when you download the podcast, because some of you think that you've arrived when you listen to the podcast instead. This is the new forthcoming novel by Stephen Sidley, who's with me here in the studio. And I took friendship liberties between him, his family, and also the publisher, and said, I know it's only going to be on the shelves, but why don't we whet people's appetites? The actual launch will be on the 4th of May. I will remind you closer to the time in Hyde Park here in Jersey, and then also the 11th of May at Book Launch in Cape Town, one of my favorite spots, and it will be available nationwide, as they say, at all reputable bookstores in the first week of May. But here he is, and we're going to be talking and just having a lekker chat because we both love books, literature, and writing. Stephen, thank you so much for coming in.
My pleasure.
I saw you strolling up and down outside. Did you feel a bit like Max flying to New York, not knowing what's going to happen next?
No. I'm an old regular over here.
First and foremost, congratulations. I really thoroughly enjoyed this book. Not that that is the mark of good writing, but I loved it.
Thank you very much.
I thought that it is filled with so much humanity. That's the first thing. Delicious dosage of dark humor. You have a wicked sense of humor.
Thank you.
You are a cunning linguist, and you write a beautiful sentence.
Thank you.
And if that is not enough, Stephen, and is really now blushing, what I also loved technically was the quality of the dialogue between your characters. I really thought it was very well. Every time I thought, the second-person descriptions are just beautiful. Please let the characters not speak. And then the next thing, when the characters speak, I think to myself, don't stop speaking because the dialogue is so beautiful. I don't want to go back to the narrator who's got a distance. So really well done.
Thank you.
And
much.
I hope that it will travel widely.
Thank you.
In a nutshell, tell my listeners basically, I'll leave it up to you to not give away too much, about the character Max that is the heart of this new novel.
Okay. So trying not to spoil, the book sort of came upon me one morning about 2 years ago, sort of with a heavenly and angelic choir, this idea of a character in his early 30s who has been a failure as a novelist and a failure as a psychologist, having been unable to heal anybody, who is adrift in life and comes upon as his last port of call the idea to start a podcast in which he talks about his life. His life is actually very boring, so in order to get an audience, he starts embellishing his life in the podcast and adding things that don't actually happen to him so that he can entertain his audience. And against all his better expectations, the podcast becomes a runaway success. And what the podcast then becomes is a mashup of fact and fiction. And there's a reason why I came to this. This thing was stimulated by a podcast I used to listen to by the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation called Wiretap, which was also a mashup of fact and fiction, and it was utterly demented and compelling and brilliant, and I thought it was a great character. Podcaster, his tortured relationship with his podcast, and his even more tortured relationship with his life.
Absolutely. And you're one of those people who think you've arrived because you love podcasts so much. I never got into podcasts myself. I'm now trying to, and they are quite special, aren't they?
Well, I now listen to podcasts 2 to 3 hours a day. So it's taken over as the major source of my information, the major source of getting rid of my confusion about the world around me. And I am completely obsessed by them. So when this thing sort of lighted on my shoulder one morning, it was like a zap from the heavens.
Now, Max is fascinating. Max's dad, unfortunately, is not very well, and a large part of the story in Free Association is about how he battles the absolute horrors of Alzheimer's, and slowly he is degenerating. But he's a fascinating character, because every time when Max and his sis go and visit while Mom is looking after ailing Dad, you never know what you will get with Dad, right? Because sometimes Bertie has these lucid moments, and who knows what will tumble out.
Yeah, Max has a particular particular idea about his father, a particular vision of his, who his father used to be when he grew up. And as his father sinks into Alzheimer's, there are parts of his brain that reveal secrets that Max would rather not know.
Can I read a little bit there? I don't think it will give it away too much. Those people who don't want to know, who love, obviously, and very familiar with Stephen's work, you can tie it to two now, but I'm not going to give all away. And in many ways, actually, the beauty of the story and the writing is just in the execution of the craft. It's not one of those where like, no, you gave away the last line type of thing. It's a fantastic meditation, I think, on the proverbial human condition. So at what point Max and Delphine goes and visits, and mom and dad is in the house, and dad is on the one side, and Max decides to excuse himself to go and have a little chat with dad. This is on page 152. And the following conversation happens. Now, be mindful, of course, that, Bertie, for the most part, is no longer Bertie, because this is what this horrible, horrible disease has done to him. But every now and then, there's just like lucid moments that come. And so the following conversation unfolds. And actually, why don't you read it? Do you like reading?
God, is it dialogue? No, you should do it. It's a dialogue. Yes, you're a much better performer than I am.
I'm not so sure. I think you're a far greater performer. Okay, I'll do it. After they had mercifully saturated matters related to his physical and mental health, Max excused himself and went to see Bertie. His father was propped up in an easy chair in the old study, staring uncomprehending at a nature show on TV. Max knelt down beside him. "Hi, Dad." Bertie turned to look at him, eyes lighting with recognition. "Hello, Max. How are you, son?" This happens sometimes. Lucidity flared in and out without warning. It could last seconds or minutes, but rarely, rarely longer. "How are you feeling, Dad?" "Fine. Where's your mother?" "She's in the kitchen with Delphine." Bertie looked momentarily confused. Then he brightened. "Did I ever tell you about the time... what's her name and I went to Mexico for a day?" "You mean Mom?" No, that other girl. I loved her. Should have married her. But it was too late. I was already engaged to your mother. She was already pregnant. I can't remember her name. Lana, maybe? She was so joyous, not like your mother." "Oh?" S-H-I-T. Bertie's dementia was about to reveal the details of an affair yet nearly three or so decades ago. Max wondered whether he should close off this avenue of conversation, not wishing to hear something that was ancient history and of little relevance and a threat to his worldview. Perhaps Bertie was making it up, but more likely he was scrabbling around in real memories. Max's curiosity got the better of him. "No, I never heard about that, Dad." Yes, Mexico, that resort. You know which one I mean. She liked to F-U-C-K, Lana." He suddenly shrieked and cackled. This was only the second time Max had heard him use the word. "Unlike your mother, she hates effing. Never even gave me a blowjob." "Oh, S-H-I-T. "Dad, can I make you some tea?" "I used to like effing, son. Thought about it all the time, still do. Did so with lots of girls while we were married. I liked hookers the most because there was less chance of being found out. Once did it three different ones in one day. Your mother was in hospital having a baby. Anyway, she's dead now." "Who, Lana?" "No, your mother. What she doesn't know won't kill her. Let's go see a couple of hookers, son." "I'm feeling randy," he shrieked again. A short, high-pitched bark. "Dad?" "V," that would be the mother. "V is still alive. She's next door with Delphine." "Who's Delphine?" I mean, you can imagine. I both wanted my partner to read the book from the beginning once it comes out, and we'll buy a proper copy, not this one for review. But I just couldn't help myself reading it in the car as we're like driving around Joburg. It's just so delicious. Where do these characters come from?
Hang on, I just got to tell you, if your radio career doesn't work out, you've got a future in theatre. That is a fabulous performance.
Why, thank you. Tell me a little bit about the characters, because I always imagine that the characters that you novelists invent are a mishmash of some of the people in your life, some self-reference, some of the psychologists. We have some friends and acquaintances in common. I was trying to figure out who you are, subtweeting, as the young ones are saying.
Well, in a couple of my earlier novels, there were people from my life who ended up in my characters. These ones are totally invented, and there are a whole bunch of sort of very colorful and delicious characters that sort of came to me in the writing of the book. There is... probably most importantly, his producer, who is Bongani Maphosa, who is a Zulu. Now, this book takes place in Los Angeles, and I wanted his producer to be an outsider. And when I thought about what outsider I could bring to the party, I thought, well, let's make him an immigrant, immigrants being big news in America. Black immigrant, South African black immigrant. Mm. And he has various other aspects of his personality that I don't want to spoil, which make him the ultimate outsider. And yes, he becomes the mirror.
Something in common with him. We'll leave it there.
Yeah, okay. He becomes the moral mirror off which Max bounces. There's the homeless schizophrenic, who is the fulcrum of the plot, who he meets in an alleyway outside his house. And that chance meeting leads to a series of events, which ends up in a comic tragedy at the end of the book. There is his sister, who is on the extreme end of the Asperger's scale, but is also his moral shoal.
You did very well with his sister, by the way. Let's pause there. Yeah. I mean, she's kind of odd because she's both central in the plot, but she's also kind of on the periphery. And she's had kind of a life where she wasn't really well loved by other kids as she grew up, you know. And yet, I don't know, I felt myself having so much empathy for her. I'm not sure if it's perhaps in part, and you can describe her as you had conceived of her and conceived her, Stephen, is that, I mean, she's just a matter-of-fact person, you know what I mean? She gets on with making fact-based decisions, even when he's asking for advice from her.
There is an incident recounted in the book where his sister protects him on the playing field at school, and his sister becomes for him throughout his entire life. She's slightly older than him.
Mm.
His protector, not only his physical protector when he was a child, but his moral protector as he gets older. She is absolutely firm against untruths and lies, which he tells in his podcast, and she tells me so, but he can't help himself.
Mm, absolutely.
Yeah.
If you want to say how's it to Stephen, give us a call on 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg or in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. Why did you decide to set the book in the States? Are you hoping to make it big in Japan?
No, it wasn't.
Except for the obligatory reference to Bongani from South Africa?
It wasn't anything as cynical as that, Eusebius. I lived in Los Angeles, in fact, very close to where the book takes place for 17 years of my life. Almost half my adult life was in L.A., and I'm very comfortable with the environment and the sort of people one meets in L.A. And also the podcast industry started in L.A. and is biggest there. So it seemed like a natural setting for me, but now being a South African resident, I wanted to have a South African character in the book through whom I could talk about politics and art and science and the various other different rants that happen within the podcast.
Mm. Now, although the book is filled with humor and there's a wonderful shout out on the cover coming out from Fred Kumalo, which I can confirm is accurate and sincere because I have read it. At the same time, it's one of those books where it's okay if people laugh a lot, you know, but at the same time, it's actually, and I don't just say this to blow smoke up your behind. You don't need me to do that. But it is a beautiful meditation on a range of existential questions. You obviously care deeply about some of these philosophical questions. They are woven into the story as well. For example, and let's start with this theme. I mean, illness and degeneration and aging are very important themes in this novel.
Yes, they are. He's 33 and beginning to feel like he's past it, because he ends up with a girlfriend who's barely out of his teens, and so there's an ageist discussion between those two, and that is juxtaposed against his father, who is comically and tragically suffering from Alzheimer's. So age plays a large part of it. There are other themes. There's the digital wall between your real life and your digital life, and when you permeate that wall, some stuff drips down the wall and you get two different interpretations of your own life. Those of us who are on social media see that all the time. There is the question of sanity when he meets this homeless schizophrenic, and of course I had to do a fair amount of research into schizophrenia. The borderline between sane and insane gets quite gray, and that theme is addressed. And there's the biggest theme of all, which is the importance of listening to other people. And he gets to that point because he's basically a narcissist at the beginning of the book. He transforms through the good offices of his producer, Bongani Maphosa.
And that's quite a journey for him, because the success of the podcast is really based on self-indulgence.
Yes, it is.
And he gets the shock of his life when Bongani gives this wonderful Sartrean existential summary in New York of what the podcast is actually aimed at. But also at that point, so many of the other people in his life start telling him about the importance of being other regarding and not just self-referential. I thought that was such a wonderful development.
Thank you.
What I also want you to reflect on for me a little bit is, you know, what goes into the making of understanding some of the ingredients that go into this kind of plot. I can imagine a first novel typically where they'd be Go Tell It on the Mountain by James Baldwin, or, you know, whatever. That can be particularly, you can use sources from your life. But when it comes to knowing what's going on in the deep web, when it comes to the tech industries, when it comes to conversations between, you know, a student and a psychology professor that taught them, you must have done a lot of homework to make sure that the specialist who knows each of those areas, the Eusebius, the philosophy major, is not going to diss you when philosophy makes a cameo appearance.
God, that would be absolutely awful. The reasons for that are rather less impressive than they may otherwise be. I have a fairly short attention span, so I've spent my life jumping from one thing to the other. I do have a Master of Science in Computer Science from UCLA. I did study psychology at university. I did play and do play jazz saxophone, and so I bounced around like a person with ADHD, and it's given me access to a lot of short spurts of time in which I was able to gain a dangerous and small bit amount of knowledge, which I managed to insert, and hopefully there are no professionals in any of these areas who are going to turn around and tell me my errors.
24 minutes after 11, let's take a quick break. Commercial breaks are things that he loves, Stephen, that he's not happening all that often when it comes to podcasts, but it will give him, when he's being interviewed as a writer, a little bit of a breathing space. More after this.
Eusebius is on Twitter at Eusebius.
Ah, some wonderful tweets. People looking forward to this book already. Buye, you're going to love it. Buye says, I love the Literature Corner. Thank you so much for indulging us today as well. Yeah, sure. Free association. Watch out for it in the first week of May. And Jackie as well. Oh, my word, you're hitting it out of the park. Can you read for us some more? Okay, well, I'll read some more the next time we have the Reading Corner on the Literature Corner. But absolutely, I think I tell you what helps, because I'm not really as dramatic as Stephen is pretending with his praise, is that the quality of his dialogue is really what is so incredible. What are your writing habits? When do you write?
I tend to write in the gaps, and I'm not one of those people. There are people that I know, they're writers that I know, that are extremely disciplined, and they wake up in the morning and they work with.
I don't know how they do it.
I can't do it. So I write in the gaps, but I will say this. When I'm writing a book, I write every single day, because if you take a small break, you lose a thread. So even if it's only 300 on a particular day, 300 words, I have to do it to keep the threads alive. So I will go without a break for the amount of weeks or months that it takes me to get to a first draft.
Do you read while you're writing?
Yes, I do. I read every night when I go to sleep, and I'm a very slow reader, so the reading of a book at night does not have any particular effect on the writing, but it keeps my brain alive to interesting turns of phrase.
What are you currently reading?
I've actually moved off fiction. I read a lot of fiction, obviously, because I write fiction.
Yes.
And it's my world now. But I used to read a lot of nonfiction. Mm. I've just suddenly gone back to it, and I'm reading Michael Short's new book called The Undoing, about the Nobel Prize winner, Danny Kahneman.
Okay. How much of yourself do you think is in Max?
Okay, so there are two schools of thought over here about the responsibilities of an author to his audience. And there is one school of thought and said that the audience should definitely not be seen through his characters. And there's another school of thought that says, why the hell not? I am definitely of the latter. My fingerprints are all over some of my characters in all my books. My favorite authors, ranging from the older American East Coast authors like Roth and Bellow and Heller, had their fingerprints, and Donna Tartt in the century, all over their characters, and I unashamedly have some of my fingerprints that come out through his podcasts.
Even I think writers and people who are into radio and podcasting will have a different, obviously as readers, we bring our own biographies to the reading process, so people will love it for different reasons. But I chuckled as well at one of the descriptions of literary festivals, although it wasn't set in Franschhoek Literary Festival, complete with the Samis and everyone loving and each other and all the fake interactions. I thought that it was just so delicious. There I thought, okay, at least in my imagination, this is a wonderful subtweet of what happens on the literary circuit. It can be such a lust.
That, as I said at the beginning, my character is a failed novelist in a previous life, and there is a description of him at one of the festivals. mixing with the big hits and the big writers and the small writers and the fading writers and the aspirant writers, and you were dead right. It's set right in that garden in Franschhoek.
Well, I wish you plenty of sales. The book comes out in the first week of May. It is called Free Association. It is a fantastic novel. It is deceptively easy to read in the sense that it goes so quickly that you may forget to pause over the profound meditations on everything from love, ageism, existential crises, family connections, and even a little bit of cheating. Stephen, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.